Hi there. Welcome to the Agency Toolkit Podcast, a podcast where we discuss stories, strategies, and techniques to help you build a successful and profitable digital marketing agency. Our episodes contain inspiring conversations with CEOs and entrepreneurs and leave you with actionable tips, ideas, and strategies you can implement into your business today. We are happy to have you with us. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and get inspired.
Hey, Julia here. If you'd like to grow your agency with a new free traffic source, we've put together a free resource for you called the Agency Traffic Blueprint, which outlines how you can acquire free organic traffic for your agency's website using Powered by Marketing. You can get that at getrubyrobin.com/blueprint or check the description of this episode for the link.
Hello, and thank you for tuning into another episode of the Agency Toolkit. I am your host, Julia McLaughlin. My guest today is Lindsay Bauscher, who is the president of Tribute Media, an inbound marketing agency and HubSpot partner in Meridian, Idaho, which was founded in 2007. Then Lindsay joined the agency in 2014, became a partner in 2015, and took over as president in 2020. Today, we're going to be discussing Lindsay's journey of building her agency and what she's learned along the way. So thanks so much for joining us today, Lindsay.
Thanks for having me. I'm a big fan.
Awesome. I'm so glad to hear that. So to get started, let's dive into a couple questions so our listeners can get to know you a little bit.
Let's do it.
So what would you say really motivates or inspires you as an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think it's, for me, it's really about building the culture of our agency. You know, we really want to be an employer of choice. We want to be, you know, we're not big or anything, but for the people who are the right kind of people who share our values, I just want to create an environment that they love working in. So I want people, you know, again, we're small. I'm sure that, you know, anybody who works for me could like go make more money working for like a big, you know, ad agency or something like that. But I never want people to leave because they want a better lifestyle. I want to be the place people come when they say, you know what I value more than, you know, just climbing a corporate ladder is I want to feel like I make a difference. I want to feel like I'm respected and appreciated at work. So I just really like cultivating that environment and that culture for our agency.
That's so cool. I love that. And then, so how did you originally get into digital marketing?
Yeah. So when I graduated from college with a degree in English and communication with a journalism emphasis, yeah. I quickly realized there weren't like a lot of jobs in journalism. And I didn't know if that was the lifestyle I wanted. Right? Right. And so what I discovered is, you know, that was 2012. And so there was a lot of buzz starting about the idea of content marketing and, you know, blogging for SEO purposes and that kind of stuff. So a college friend of mine and, you know, who was kind of on the same path as me, we started our own small content marketing business. And we were talking to people about like this blogging thing that, you know, maybe they thought of as, you know, recipes from, you know, moms and, you know, fitness kind of things or all these like niche kind of blogs that were coming around at the time. And so we just started talking to people about the importance of doing that for their business. And, you know, with the typical struggles that you experience in a small, small business. I mean, basically at that point, it was just two of us freelancing together, kind of.
Right.
We ran into the issue, the classic solopreneur style thing where you got to spend your time marketing yourself, taking the meetings, and then you got to do the stuff when you sell it. And then there's just not enough time in the day. So, you know, we struggled through that quite a bit. You know, the content marketing part was great. Like when we got gigs, they were great. It was so fun. When you compare it to journalism, I always say like content marketing is like journalism, but you don't have to be unbiased. Like you get to just talk about how fantastic this product is or this company is or whatever. So, so we were doing that, having the classic struggles that small businesses do. And that's when I found Tribute Media and they needed some additional help with creating content. And so I took like a contract with Tribute Media to just start, you know, filling a gap for them. And I was just like immediately in love because all of a sudden I could do more for a client than just write their content and send them on their way. Like, good luck. I was able to be a part of like the whole solution they needed, which is to get that content on a website and then promote it through social media and driving traffic. So it just was really exciting to see how this little piece of content marketing that I had been doing to be a part of that bigger solution.
So you were just ready for that next kind of evolution of your journey, and you just really like the challenge of, you know, putting all the pieces together for the total marketing solution.
Yeah. I was able to, offer people more than just like, here's the words, you know, make sure people read them.
Yeah.
However you do that, you know?
Yeah. So tell us about, you know, what that decision was like, you know, when you decided to transition from doing your, you know, the solopreneur venture to, you know, joining Tribute Media and then ultimately becoming partner. So what was that like?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, it was always a struggle to try to do it all as, you know, kind of being this two gal group. And so, you know, when I got to Tribute Media and it was like, oh, somebody else is in charge of getting the leads and making the sales. And then I just get to do the thing. And that's wonderful.
Yes.
That was fantastic. And then the environment here was already really great, right? Like, this place doesn't have a great culture today just because of me by any means. The founder also really invested in building a culture that people wanted to work in. In fact, you know, when we won one of the best places to work in Idaho in 2017, we won first place, you know, so there was a lot of press around that and he did a lot of interviews. And the thing that he would always say is like, I just wanted to create a place that I wanted to work at. And so because he started that, I've just been continuing the legacy. I ended up in this place where I was like, I want to be here more. You know, I had this contract. I was here like a few days a week, half days, you know. Yeah. I was like, I want to be here all the time, actually. So that is how I, you know, just it came up that they needed a project manager. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can be a project manager. So
yeah.
I was able to juggle because actually the previous project manager had just been part-time anyway. So I was like, I can do both. I can write content. I can be a project manager. And then ultimately the director of web development left. And I was like, I can be a director of web development. I have known nothing about actual coding or doing any of that stuff. But I knew I'd bet, you know, I'd had like previous roles in like leadership and previous jobs and stuff like that. So, you know, I felt like I could keep the business on track and I could keep the team on track and ask the right kinds of questions, even though I didn't actually know what their job was. And so actually it was pretty successful. It was really great. At one point, the founder, who has a web development background, was running the marketing team, and I had a marketing background and was running the dev team. And so it was actually really good for our culture, for, you know, everybody, just again, like asking the right questions, like really digging deeper. And maybe, I guess, thinking outside of the box, as, you know, cliche as that is, it forced us to think differently and do things differently. And so it was really cool. In 2015, I had the opportunity to get partial ownership of the company along with my current partner, because the founder is completely out of the business now, but she and I both became minority owners at the same time, which is great because she's been here 13 years now. So she was like one of the very early employees of Tribute Media.
Very cool.
So yeah, that was sort of that journey. And, you know, the founder was here, like still leading the company up until, you know, in 2020, we started to talk about what it would look like for him to kind of hand the reins over completely to me. And so we did that in 2020. And then it was just the beginning of this year that he was like, okay, he still like stayed around and consulted and, you know, took on certain projects and, you know, did some sales stuff for us. But yeah, then in early this year, he left. And so now Jillian and I have been leading the team.
That's amazing. And I think it's really, really cool how, you know, you saw that opportunity with, you know, taking on leadership of the dev team. And you're like, I didn't really know that much, like you didn't have that perfectionist attitude. You're just like, you just looked at it as like a challenge that you thought you could do. So you went for it. Whereas I feel like a lot of individuals, and I think it's more so women in particular, you know, have that kind of attitude where they don't, it's like that fear of failure. You want to make sure that you can do it perfectly before you would even put yourself out there to apply for a position like that. So I think that's really, really cool and inspiring that you just, you know, took that leap of faith and then you crushed it. So yeah. That's awesome.
It honestly is, you know, I didn't really think about it in these terms until you just like kind of laid it out that way. But I think it was probably the best thing I could have ever done to, not that I am ever exempt from this, but to like cure me of imposter syndrome was to be like, no, I actually, you know, to just be open and honest, like I don't actually know what this role is or what the people I'm leading do. I can't do their jobs. And to just really own that and be like, but I'm still going to bring value. Like you can't be afraid of getting found out, of not really being good enough. If you know that you're learning, you know that you are just working with the skill set you have to help other people be successful. So it really snapped me out of that because it was like, no, I just own it. Like I'm just figuring it out as I go.
Yeah, that's so cool. I love that. Awesome. So, you know, when you first took over as president, what were some of those challenges that you had to sort of overcome along the way?
You know, I know there, yeah, I mean, there's always challenges, right? But it really felt very natural, honestly. Like I'd been around long enough. In fact, I think if anything, I felt more challenged when I was sort of moving up and becoming a boss to people who'd been in the agency longer than I had, like when in those earlier days of becoming a project manager and then a development department, like that all felt a little bit scarier of like, well, are they going to like me? Are they going to respect me? Did they feel like it should have been them? Like all of those kinds of questions. Right.
Right.
But moving into the presidency role, because I had been in a leadership position for so long, and because we all already have autonomy, speaking for myself, you know, my title for many years before it was president was director of web strategy, because it did kind of straddle that line between I'm not like a web developer, but I'm help setting the strategy for, you know, website design, user experience, traffic generation, all of that kind of stuff. So yeah. That title, you know, I was still on the leadership team. I was, you know, still executive level or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, everybody, it wasn't like a huge change. It was, and in fact, you know, the founder, Corey, he used to always tease that I was, you know, his boss anyway. And so, you know, I think everybody was, you know, everybody adapted to it just fine. And like I said, nothing changed that much because not only did I already have autonomy to do things the way I wanted to with my role of director of web strategy, but our team already gets a ton of autonomy in their roles. We have an expert for everything. And so when it comes to that area, like they are the boss of it. You know, my SEO specialist is the boss of anything that we're going to do or change or pursue in relationship to search engine optimization. Our art director is the boss of anything design related. So, you know, I'm not going in and trying to tell them how to do their jobs or, you know, what to do differently, or let's make this product or service. Like I let them lead those conversations. I let them discover like, hey, we could be offering this service, or we should offer a product, you know, at this price point, you know, so everybody just owns their own thing. I don't think they felt like that much was changing because they were getting a new boss, because they're right. Their own boss.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it sounds like it was a gradual transition, and it sort of seemed like that was the avenue that you were probably going to be headed towards, as well as the founder was phasing himself out anyway. So, well, yeah, I'm glad to hear that was like such a natural fit. That's awesome. Very cool. So I'd love to pivot a little bit and talk about sales a little bit. So, you know, how do you bring in more leads into the agency and then close those prospects?
Yeah. So we've done it a lot of different ways throughout the years. But right now, we don't have a salesperson. Like, you know, we're an inbound marketing agency, so we do all of that stuff for ourselves. We're creating valuable content. We're getting it out to where people are spending time online. So we get a lot of inbound leads. We also are really active in our community. We're in this like really cute little downtown area with lots of small like mom and pop businesses. They all, you know, because we support them, they always want to support us when they, you know, reach a point where they can, you know, afford to work with us and all of that. Like, so, you know, that stuff happens really, really organically. Nice. And then of course, you know, the lead comes in, but somebody still needs to like talk them through that process. So that's mostly been me, honestly. And that's been very successful because, you know, who doesn't want to, you know, get to talk to the president of the agency and feel like they're really getting like the full picture because it's somebody who knows everything. I don't know everything, but like knows all of our processes inside and out, you know, and so I just think people really like that and appreciate that. So we have a very great close rate because, you know, once people have experienced what we have to offer in terms of the resources we offer on our website and everything like that, and then couple that with just, you know, kind of confirming that by chatting with me, we do really well. Now, that's not to say it will be that way forever. I actually just hired a really great, really experienced guy for, he's our client success coordinator. So he is going to be working with our existing clients and, you know, be their main point of contact and communication. But he also has a background in sales. And so he's really going to help me and support me in that. And he's starting to have some of those like, you know, qualification conversations with our leads. And, you know, and again, I still think that's going to go really well because he'll also be their point of contact when they become a customer. So he's involved that's from cool. the very beginning and stays their, you know, the main point of contact. So I think that will work really well as well. But that is really kind of what leads and sales look like for us today. Now, it's not to say that we've had the big sales team, we've done the cold outreach, we've, you know, done all kinds of stuff in the past, but we've just found that for the rate and the size we want to be and the rate at which we want to grow, which mm-hmm. is not super huge and not super rapidly, that's all we really need. To get in terms of leads is what sort of happens naturally.
Very cool. That's interesting. And then, you know, in the sales process, you know, are there any objections that you hear that come up from time to time? And if so, you know, how do you overcome those objections?
Yeah, I mean, I think it usually comes down not just to price, but to aligning what what the client expects for what they're paying. So one of the things that we talk about when we qualify clients is we, you know, in addition to them, you know, being a good like cultural fit, like they're gonna, and you know, one thing is we do have a 4-day work week. So if, so cool. you know, somebody expects us to be at their beck and call 24/7 or even Monday through Friday, that's not what we have to offer here. So, you know, it really has to be like a right fit client, like somebody who understands our culture and respects it and, you know, doesn't expect us to, you know, be available all the time. So, you know, there's those things, but when we talk about budget, like we never want someone to be at the top of their budget when they work with us, particularly if they're at the bottom of what, you know, we know it's going to take to move the needle, because then their expectations are really high because they're spending what feels to them like too much money. And right. our delivery and what we're performing and how much, you know, time we're spending with their account is not, you know, they're not our top paying client who gets a lot of attention and a lot of strategy and a lot of just bandwidth from us. So that's, I think the biggest thing is making sure that when we talk about pricing, that not only like, can they do it, but like they can do it very comfortably. And also like what happens when we need to make a recommendation on, well, you know, you need this tool to be more successful, or you need to put some money into Google ads or social media, like advertising. If they're already maxing out what it's going to take for us to just do the organic, you know, kind of optimization or build their website or whatever, yep. like it sucks to tell people like we could get better results, but you don't have the money to do it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That makes so much sense that you guys are just, you know, really finding out who your ideal client is. You're just going after them specifically. So are you ever in a position where you have to say no to a prospect that you don't want to take them on?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. We definitely have both for the reason of like, hey, I can tell this budget is going to stretch you and I can't like guarantee you any kind of results, especially not for, you know, that low of a budget. And, you know, people are sometimes they'll ask like, well, you know, could you just do less than like, you know, this proposal, you're going to write this many blog posts for me and you're going to do this. And, you know, can you just do less of that? It's like, we can, but it's not going to move the needle. And so you're going to be annoyed writing us a check every month. Well, people don't really write checks anymore, but you're going to be annoyed paying that invoice every month when nothing's really happening, you know, you're just basically maintaining the status quo and nobody wants to pay for status quo. They want to pay for increases and, you know, positive results. So that's, you know, that's where we've just had to say like, no, I just don't think you have enough to spend to be happy with the results. And we don't want to just take your money, until you get tired of giving it to us. We also have said no for just not feeling like they were going to be a good fit. But, you know, we don't share that. Like, we don't say like, hey, we don't think you can trust us, or we don't think that you'll treat the team well. We try to be a little more diplomatic.
Just because
you don't want to like make somebody mad. If they've liked you enough to start interacting with you, you want to hope that maybe like someday down the road, they'll have a referral and it will be someone who's not quite like them. Something like that.
Yeah, exactly. No, it makes so much sense. And yeah, I think it's so important, like you said, not to burn those bridges. And also, I love that you guys have that transparency and that honesty if, you know, a client, their budget just isn't quite big enough, because yeah, like you said, you know, then you want to keep those really happy clients on, because they're the ones who are probably going to, you know, bring in the great referrals to you more so than, you know, the smaller clients.
Well, and that's the thing, like our highest budget clients actually expect the least out of us in terms of meeting, you know, they tend to cancel meetings on us. Like, we're like, hey, we want to touch base and, you know, like give you a chance to ask us questions or talk about your marketing. And they're like, hey, we're good. So
yeah.
You know, it's always the, you know, the people who are stretched really thin to do the absolute minimum that are like, they want to talk every day. And it's like, you know, we just, like I said, those expectations just don't align.
Yeah.
That's where you get in trouble.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. So, you know, how do you guys really set yourselves apart from other agencies? What makes you guys, you know, how do you try to just set yourselves apart and be a little bit unique?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a few factors. You know, one is that we are doing inbound marketing. We're a HubSpot partner agency, which of course there are lots of people doing that. And there are lots of HubSpot partners, but in like, particularly in our local area, there really aren't. We were the first HubSpot partner agency in Idaho. We run the Boise HubSpot user group. They're really, even the other HubSpot partners in Idaho are like not based here necessarily. Like they have a presence here, but they're not, you know, like homegrown, I guess. So, you know, not that all of our business comes from here, but when we are out in the community and we do, you know, work with local businesses here, I think that approach and the tools that we use really help us stand apart from like local competition, right? And then I guess the other piece would be like that we do, we really care about being a lifestyle agency and having a good work-life balance. And we want that for our clients too, right? Like they all, you know, oh, that must be nice. And it's like, hey, like we can, you know, we want to help you get there. I mean, that's the thing. Like when I think about, you know, that first question you asked and like, okay, yes, I want to build this thing, but I can only do that for so many people. Like we have 13 people right now, like they all get to experience that wonderful culture, but I want to help lots of businesses do that because, you know, I did some work, you know, we did some leadership, you know, training and growth stuff. And one of the things she kind of worked was like, peel back the layers of the onion. Why? And for me, my big why just came down to like, happy people suck less. Like if the world was full of people who like didn't hate their jobs and loved where they work and wanted to work and had a good work-life balance and they weren't rushing to like pack all their personal errands and things into like a weekend or whatever, like 2 days, that they would be a lot happier and the world would just be better. So, you know, I think ultimately we always share that with our clients. Like, we would love for your business. We want to be a part of your story of helping your business grow to the point where you can do this too.
Yeah. So cool. I love that. And so talk a little bit about what it was like implementing the 4-day work week. Was that something that was implemented once you came aboard Tribute Media?
Yeah. So, well, kind of. So I guess it was maybe 2016 that we started Office Free Fridays. So we set the expectation with our clients that Friday is a day, you know, phones roll to voicemail, don't expect an answer to the emails, like all that stuff. Like, we're going to use that as a day of personal development or really digging in and working on big projects. So we started by closing the office, and yeah, that was like 5-6 years before we went to a 4-day work week, where we just started the expectations with clients. Like, we don't work for you personally on Fridays, but we're still here working and growing, but we're not answering the phone.
Right.
And so we did that for a while. And of course that was, you know, something that our whole leadership team kind of, you know, came up with, but that it was really important to Corey, our founder, to experiment with this, because, you know, he always felt that like not everybody's they're most productive at the office. Sometimes they needed a change of scenery, you know? So that was a great opportunity to let people go work at a coffee shop or a pub for a day, you know, like work from home, do whatever. So that was really great. And I think it just set the stage. But going into our annual planning meeting in 2021, coming off of COVID and all of that stuff, it was like, well, not even coming off of it, we did it remotely. We were still in the thick of it. But, you know, what I said was, actually, I think I had COVID at the time too. My goal for us, you know, is to be a true 4-day work week by the beginning of 2022. So in this meeting next year, we're going to be launching that. So really that set the stage for all of our team to think about what they needed to do to make that possible, because we need to get the same amount of sales. We need to still get the same amount of work done. How are we going to do that in 4 days? Like, it can't, you know, we're not going to lower our goals in terms of, you know, revenue and profitability and all of that. So how do we do both of those things? So it just really got everybody thinking about, okay, what do I need to document? What can we automate? You know, what could we potentially outsource? What could we use our virtual assistant for? All of those things, so that, you know, things maybe could still keep moving on Fridays, but that we didn't necessarily have to do them. And so everybody's goals throughout the year were just all related to things that they needed to do to make sure they could get their job done in 4 days. And so everybody did, and we successfully launched it at the beginning of 2022. And it was wonderful, because January of 2022, we had our highest revenue month in the history of the entire company.
So cool.
The whole first half of the year, you know, we didn't grow month over month necessarily, but we had higher revenue than any previous month in any previous year. So
that's awesome. Yeah. And I love that you guys sort of, you know, work together as a team to accomplish that goal. And then, you know, you had that full year to also really work towards it. So I think that makes a lot of sense, really, like, you know, this is where we want to get, this is what we need to do regularly to reach that goal. You know, and putting the proper thought and effort into what needs to happen. Awesome. So where do you see Tribute Media in 5 years' time?
5 years. Well, I hope we are still in our cute little downtown area, but our office, we are kind of bursting at the seams a little bit. you know, we hope to stay around here. It's growing. We all love being a part of this community. You know, people take walks during the day, you know, it's just so nice. You know, definitely physically want to still be located here in Meridian. And you know, like I said, we will grow, just naturally, but not super fast. You know, I don't see us, I think, you know, if we're going to add people to the team at this point, it's going to be to bring in another service, to add another area of expertise. Like, we don't have, you know, video or photography in-house. Like, maybe we can grow to the point where we have something like that. And then, of course, we'll grow in terms of, you know, the amount of people we have managing client accounts and being that point of contact for clients, because we always want to make sure that, you know, everybody is being, you know, is getting the attention that they deserve and, you know, is yes. expected. So, yeah. So, I mean, we'll grow in our like client delight area, making sure that we have enough, you know, account managers and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be slow, responsible growth that, you know, just continues to further how we can help our clients and how many areas we can help them in.
I love that. Yes. Cause you never want to get into a situation where you're growing too fast and then you're sacrificing the quality of, you know, your team's getting overwhelmed, the quality of the work's slipping. So yes, I love that slow, responsible growth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we are now getting ready to wrap up, but first we have the fast five. So I have five rapid fire questions for you.
Bring it on.
So what's a book you've read that's made an impact on you?
I read so much. So it is always, I had to think about this beforehand because it's like, how do I choose? I read about 50 books a year. So
wow. That's impressive. Lot. Yeah.
And I try to do a good balance of like business and personal growth and just for funsies. Right. But yep. Rocket Fuel, which is like kind of a companion book to the Traction EOS. So it's, you know, Gina Wickman, the same like group that created that. It's a book that focuses solely on the relationship between the visionary and the integrator in business. And that book absolutely changed our business. In fact, it was sort of the precursor to having those conversations about what it would look like for me to be president, because what we found when we read that, well, I read it first, then I like forced Corey, our founder, and Jillian, my partner, to read it. And we realized Corey and I are both visionaries. Jillian is a classic integrator, but Corey and I were going to vision the company to death if we both stayed in leadership, trying to be the visionary. And so that absolutely changed the business when we realized that and kind of understood who we were and what our roles were.
So cool. Yes, I love Traction. And we've implemented the EOS system with Review Robin and love it. So yes, I definitely want to read Rocket Fuel now. That's awesome. Great recommendation.
And there's tests that was the other thing that came out of that. There's like actually a test that you can take that will show, you know, what your visionary score is or your integrator score. So yeah, it's eye-opening.
Very cool. Love it. And what does your morning routine look like?
Well, since my son went back to school 2 weeks ago, it's been pretty great. And you're going to think I'm a much better person than I am like most of the rest of the year or before, but like I've been dropping him off at school at 7:30, gives me enough time. I go to the gym, get a little workout in, then I come back. I just come to my office and get ready for the day. I mean, my team will come in and I'll just be like putting my makeup on in my little mirror at my desk and like, welcome to vanity hour. I'm just, you can chat at me. We can have a little meeting, but I'm just putting on my face. That's kind of just how I've been starting is with a workout and I've really enjoyed it.
Nice. That's awesome. I know it's very disruptive having them home for the summer. It's so nice in one way, but I know it's tough finding that balance. And then is there a CEO that you follow or study?
You know, there isn't like one, you know, big, well-known, famous CEO that like I subscribe to really. But what I do love is following a lot of, you know, smaller business owners and entrepreneurs, because I just really like the conversations they start. I really like to understand the struggles that they have, the challenges they face, their pain points, because, you know, ultimately those are my clients, right? So yeah. I really like to just, yeah, follow as many, you know, small to medium-sized business owners as possible to really stay in tune with kind of what everybody's struggling with and talking about.
Awesome. And what is your favorite online tool?
I gotta say HubSpot. We've been partners since 2015. And, you know, we started using just the marketing tools. I mean, that might have really been all they had at the time. I think they had some sales tools. But it's like now our entire business tool, because they do, they've grown as a company, they've grown in their product offerings. And so we've just been able to kind of grow into using it across all areas of the business, from marketing to sales to customer service. So yeah, HubSpot is basically what we run our business on. And awesome. We help other people do it too. So
yeah. Yeah. That's so great. I love that. Yeah. We use HubSpot as well. And it's such an amazing tool. I love it.
And just gets better all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And last question, what's one thing you wish you had known when you began your career?
I think it would just be, you know, my mom told me to go to school for business. And I was like, that sounds boring. Like, I don't even understand what that means. but I, you know, what I realized going to school for something I was really passionate about was, hey, I'm already really good at this. I already really love it. Like, I don't need a lot of training in it. I mean, I guess that's not true for all industries and stuff, but, you know, for writing and, you know, being creative, like I didn't need to like go be taught how to do that. And I see it time and time again with small to medium-sized business owners and entrepreneurs who are trying to start their own business. They have something they're really good at and really passionate about. And that's what they've invested all of their time and energy into perfecting. And they don't know how to be in business. And so, I mean, I think if I would have thought that through a little more, or had, you know, the foresight to see like, oh, I can write well and do that for money. But if I want to do that in a bigger setting in a business, I need to know how to write a business plan and how to like what I need attorneys to help me with and what I need CPAs to help me with. And, you know, like I wish, and I see that all the time, with, especially in like the trades and stuff, you know, people are really good at their job. They just don't know how to run a business. And I wish I would have gotten a little more classical training around that. I have just been learning as I go and trying to help as many people as possible learn from the mistakes I made along the way. But yeah.
Yeah, business definitely. Yeah, definitely great advice when you're first starting out. Yeah, definitely something to consider, because it'll be very beneficial if you know you want to own your own business someday. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Lindsay. It was a real pleasure to have you on the podcast, and I really enjoyed learning about your story.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Agency Toolkit. We hope you've learned something new that you can implement into your agency today. If you liked this episode, please subscribe to our podcast, and we'll see you next time.